you do that?
It was a good countdown.
That was the opposite of a good countdown. Anti-shout-out to Mason Clark.
Your life.
Five, your life. All right, go. All right, well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a silver pro chasing gold, Michael Hinderacher.
It sounds so nice when you say it like that. It sounds so much more, like, focused when you say it like that.
You know, I actually think that you are pretty focused. So, I'm glad that you think that, like, I'm building you up, because it was funny, like, I had this person who messaged me this week, and they were asking, like, hey, so, like, what do you and Michael do for GPs? What ones are you going to? And I was like, this is a really easy solution to figure out. If the drive is 12 hours or less from Salt Lake City, Utah, Spencer Howland will be there. If the flight costs $250 or less from Salt Lake City, Utah, Michael Hinderacher will be there. And that's, like, the entire formula. You will now know what all the GPs we are going to.
Yeah, that's, like, close to true. But it sounds like a lot of pressure when you spell it out like that.
Right. I skipped Seattle. I'm sure you've skipped GPs. Like,
yeah, it's probably... Sometimes I just forget to check. Right, like, you know, there was a point in time where I could have gotten it for that price, but not at the time. That
not now.
3 days.
Well, it's really funny because, like, I was just like looking at GPs, and I was like, LA can't be that far, and it's actually like closer than so many GPs I go to. And I'm like, oh well, apparently I'm going to LA. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah, no, it's not that bad. It's not that bad a drive. You just get to stay on I-15 the whole way.
You know what else isn't that bad is our sponsors. You can check out them out at Oasis Games. You can get 15% off of your order, which, by the way, it's not that hard to figure out, Mason Clark. It's 15% off your first order by using the code CCMTG, spelled out, and it's 4% off of every order using the code Would That Be Good? Until you can't use that code once you get so much store credit back that they won't get that, like, Crystal Commerce doesn't work anymore. So, kind of some confusion. I actually did get a message about this, and I had to re-listen to the podcast. I was like, what are they talking about? So, you actually don't get store credit back with the codes. It's actually off of your order. However, as you're building up credit at Oasis Games, you get a level of credit back on every order you put in. So, eventually, you're going to be getting more credit back than the code gives. And once that happens, Crystal Commerce kicks out the code that you use and forces you instead to use just the credit back. Kind of confusing. Talk to Crystal Commerce, not Oasis Games. But if you don't want any confusion at all, you can just shop at Fusion Gaming for your sub product. Fusion Gaming is the sponsor of our other sponsor at the Mana Base. You can check out the Mana Base to watch Negachu the Mason Slayer and all of his Burn and Merfolk awesomeness. They support up-and-coming content creators like us, like Negachu, and tons of other content creators. Check them out at Fusion Gaming and the Mana Base. You can support their podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Before we get there, don't forget to check out the other podcasts in the network on Limited Time Only and Common Knowledge. I want to give a special shout-out to Lobert. He is one of the hosts of Common Knowledge. And, you know, when you quote-unquote hire somebody, you have a certain level of expectation of, like, what they are going to do for you, right? As their, like, what their job entails. And Lobert's job was to show up and talk on a podcast. That is not what Lobert does. Lobert writes the show. He edits the show. He posts the show in video form with the intro and outro already on it, with editing out anything that I could possibly ever want to edit out. The dude is straight gas and straight fire. Like, if I don't even have words for how much I appreciate him. And I just want to give, like, if you're looking for proper content, I read these guys' show notes every week. I leave, like, 5 notes on their show notes and just let them go. They're crushing it. They're doing everything I could ever want. It's everything I ever wanted them to be in a podcast. And I really appreciate what Lobert and Brandon are doing. Check them out. If you want another show that I'm on, check out Limited Time Only with Danny Cathro, as Mason likes to call him, the third best silver pro in Utah. And
that's so mean.
It is, right? Mason's a jerk. But and And Mason will actually be filling in for me, so you can hear him insult Danny live every week for the next
what
2 weeks.
What if Danny just daggers him back?
I mean, it's not hard. It's Mason.
Can we just have Corey replace Danny for a week just to dagger
Mason?
Oh,
man. That would be so hurtful for Mason. Why would we do that to him? But yeah, you can check out those other shows. Before we get into this week's show, we're going straight into a set review, which we're going to talk about in just a second. I want to talk really quick about a couple of things. So the first thing is, as people who follow me on social media know, I'm stressed out of my mind right now. So the house that I signed a three and a half year lease on so that we could save up to buy a house of our own, the owners decided to sell out of the blue. And they didn't put in an early termination clause into the lease and all this stuff, so they bought me out of my lease. They're paying me to move. And they're paying me to move very abruptly, that I wasn't planning for. And it's really stressful on my wife with, like, I mean, we have a one-year-old. We weren't planning on moving with a one-year-old. It's pretty rough. And to top it off, work has... I need to be dedicating a lot more time to my job than I typically do. So I'm going to be taking 2 weeks off from constructive criticism and limited time only. I won't be writing the shows. I won't be editing them. I'm going to be taking 2 weeks off. In addition to that, 2018 has been an extremely hard year in my life. Not hard like oh, my life is so bad. Just like raising a toddler, doing magic content, having a job that's very, very demanding. It's been a lot more than I expected. It's clear to my friends, you know, and hopefully to you as the listener, that magic has taken a little bit of a backseat as I'm trying to figure out life right now. And, you know, my two pro points for the year kind of show that. Like, I'm just not where I need to be in magic. And in addition to that, I haven't been where I need to be for the Patreon. We have a lot of patrons that need their rewards, whether it's tokens, whether it's wristbands, whether it's shoutouts on the podcast, whether it's, you know, I do really good with coaching. Like, I get that in there. But, you know, there are things that I could do better. And I just want to apologize. The tokens came months ago. I got super sick for a month. And then I had to catch up at work. And I never put Patreon at the front of that. And that's my fault. And, you know, part of this, the point of this podcast is to be transparent and to also be always improving. And there's a lot that I can do to improve as far as the Patreon is concerned. So I want to say, first of all, say sorry. And also say that the tokens and hopefully wristbands, kind of depending on price, wristbands were actually taken off of the rewards on Patreon because they're so much more expensive to ship than they're worth. But if I can get them out for the cost that I need to, they'll also be sent out this week. But I'm skipping pre-releases and hopefully sending Saturday, just sending out rewards to patrons. I'm sorry that I'm so far behind. I love you guys. I really appreciate you. And I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to say other than I'm sorry. So. And also, don't blame Michael. Like, he has literally nothing to do with it. He just shows up. And it's my job to handle the business side, and I've done a poor job of it. So thank you for everybody's patience. When the tokens came, I said, please let me know if you've been a patron that didn't receive them. I do want to send them to all patrons who have ever pledged $3 or more. So to make my life easier and without asking him, instead of messaging me because I will lose it because of how many messages I get, please message Mason Clark. If you've been a patron of $3 or more, he's going to create a list for me that I'm going to grab from him on Saturday, and I will send them to you in addition. Just send him the amount you pledged, when you pledged it, your address, and we'll get those tokens to you. So thank you, everybody, for your patience, and let's get into the set review, because Dominaria is here, Michael. It's here.
Sweet.
He's, like, so even keel. He's like, yeah, whatever.
This set's cool.
It sets hard. So, some really quick changes to the site review. If you're a patron, you notice we didn't post a top 25 request this time. And there's a few reasons. One is because every time we've done it, they've gotten less and less responses. They were super popular. We got like 30 of them the first time. And 25, and then 15, and then 10, and then 3. And it's like, okay. So clearly this is too much work to put on our patrons.
It is. I mean, 25 cards is like a lot to get excited about. And when you're trying to figure out what you like more than other cards, or like what you want to hear talked about more, just like trying to actually rank 25 cards is
it's just crazy. It's tough. And like when we thought of the idea, it was a really cool idea, right? Like we're putting the power in your hands. It's like an AP pool. We're going to give you like the cards you want to talk about. And the truth is, and this is something that I thought of when we had Jadeen on, she talked about like talking about the things you love. And I was like, you know what's really sucked about our set reviews lately is we don't get to talk about the things we love. We talk about the things they love, and it shows when it comes to the set reviews.
Where sure, it's hard to get excited about someone else's favorite card if it's not.
It is.
Your, I mean, to be fair, a lot of the time they line up, but
they do. It's pretty easy for them to line up, but I don't want it to be where the number one favorite card is being pushed because they want us to talk about it, and we don't want to talk about it because that's bad content, and we want to create good content for you, right? And so what we've done this time and what we hope to do in the future is just come with a list of cards that we are excited about and then just talk about them. So that's it. That's the whole thing. We're not grading them. We're just going to go in depth on the cards we're excited to talk about.
It's kind of nonsense to grade them anyways, right? Like,
it doesn't matter. I mean, in constructed, it's just whatever.
What does that even mean? Yeah, like we're not drafting them. You just choose the ones you want and put them in a deck. Yeah.
Yep. So, with that being said, let's start with Dauntless Bodyguard. So this card is 1 white for a 2/1. It's a human knight, and as it enters the battlefield, choose another creature, and you can sacrifice it to give that creature a destructible until end of turn. So first of all, I thought this card was a common, and I was super excited about it for my mono-white heroic pupper deck.
Well, it is not a common.
Yeah, I feel bad about that.
That's
This card makes Savannah Lions look just as silly as every other card that's made Savannah Lions look silly.
Which is funny because Savannah Lions was like pretty good for a long time. I remember that card getting reprinted in like 9th edition or something, or whatever edition that was, and like it was like pretty good in standard.
I have played like straight up Savannah Lions with downside in standard multiple times, and not.
Been not,
not even
about
in,
it?
No, yeah. It's just like, it's whatever. Like, this is the price you pay when you want these kind of creatures. And the thing is about that is, we took a step back. So, I think it might have been Amonkhet, where there was not a single... Hold on. It was when Amonkhet was coming out, where the only 2/1 for 1 in all of Standard was going to be the green 2/1 in Eldritch Moon for 1 green that flipped.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I was like, what has happened in Standard? And people were like, well, no. This card's this. If like they brought up a Toolcraft Exemplar, and they brought up the one, if it's an artifact, it's a Curd Ape, the Nerd Ape card. And it's like, no. What I'm saying is like they've taken a step back from like giving us Savannah Lions with upside across the board.
Sure, because there was, like, the Shadows, like, all the Humans decks, right? You just had, like, a bunch of 2/1s for 1.
Right. For a while in Standard, that was just a thing. Like, every color just got a ton of them. And at one point, White had, I think, 6 of them.
It was a lot, because I remember in that Mono-White Humans deck, you, like, weren't playing all of them.
Right.
Right? There were, right. like, extras. That
and there were ones that weren't Humans.
Sure. But, like, there were like, you weren't playing all the available...
So reasonable ones. So this is a return to like saying, okay, like this is a card that's worth play, like worth something. We're going to give you this. So, Michael, let's just talk about Dauntless Bodyguard. This card seems pretty good to me. First of all, it's a relevant turn one play, even if you don't have another creature in play, right? Because it's just like. Whatever,
sure.
I just like
I mean,
played
a 2/1 for 1's always fine on 1, right? That's never been the problem with a 2/1 for 1.
Right, and now it's like, okay, well, I'm going to play this late to protect my other guy during this combat step.
Well, during a combat step, but also, like, just from a removal spell, I think this card is just, like, it's pretty good, and I think it's pretty obvious that it's pretty good. Like, I don't know that you're going to lose a ton of games to Dauntless Bodyguard specifically, but this is the kind of card you sort of need a critical mass of. You need, like, a critical mass of, like, cheap aggressive things that you're happy to play. And this deck can, or this card can fit into a deck, rather, that maybe goes up a little bit higher than some of these other hyper-aggressive 2-1s, because the more you have creatures that are worth protecting, the more valuable this guy gets as a mid-game play.
Yeah, one thing that I think about when I see this card is, like, sometimes, you know, you really want to be able to, like, double spell early, and this is a really good card to double spell with, because it's like, all right, I'm going to play this card, and then I'm going to play... So, like, on turn 3 is a really good example, right? Where you've, like, played a really good 1-drop, you played a really good 2-drop, and then on turn 3, you play either another really good 1-drop or another really good 2-drop, and then you play this, and you're like, okay, you know... It's not like you target the creature, right? It's as this enters the battlefield, you choose another creature.
Right. So you're always going to choose something, except you always, itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, this does a really good job of saying, okay, I've played a lot of relevant creatures right now, and now it's time for you to decide which one matters to you now if you have open mana, and if you don't, I'm just going to pick my best creature. And...
Yeah, so this card isn't, like, it's not as powerful, I think, as Selfless Spirit in some ways, but it kind of, like, I think some of the play patterns will be reminiscent of that.
Don't say that. I hate that card.
Like, right where you, like, your opponent gets really priced into how they're
making decisions.
Like, it just takes decisions away from your opponent, and cards that do that typically are at least playable and often very good, and this guy's pretty good on just rate too, so I would be surprised if he wasn't seeing a fair bit of play at some point.
Yeah. I think that when I look at this card, I see there's not a point in the game in the type of decks that would want this card that this card's not good. And I think it's important to, like, highlight the fact that we're saying the type of decks that would want this, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you still have to be playing a pretty aggressive deck to play a 1-mana 2-1. I think that that's a given, and, like, they're sort of mitigating its upside in that sense, right? They're saying, well, you can only protect one other creature, and you have to be playing a pretty aggressive deck, so the creatures you're protecting probably aren't insane, but...
I mean, if I was protecting Voice of Resurgence, or maybe that's a bad example, because that card does a good job on... Yeah, Thalia. Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah. No, but I think that leads you to say, like, yeah, I can see why this card might be good, because if I have to play it as a 2-1 for 1, it's okay. And if I get to protect something else, it's okay. And yeah.
Also,
I didn't realize protecting the same creature.
I didn't think of that. You can stack these.
Yeah, you can also stack it so, like, one protects the other protects a creature, depending on the kind of removal that your opponent has.
That's a really good point, because, like, you could say, like, say you're playing around, like, one of the red Wrath effects.
Right.
You can protect them in different ways, or you're playing around, I can't talk.
Specifically against Wrath effects, you would probably want them both, you would want four creatures with each of them protecting something different, but... Against,
right.
Like, spot removal specifically, you could force him to, like, kill this one first, kill this one second.
Well, yeah. So, well, yeah, if you're, like, what is the 1-mana deal 2 damage?
Shock?
Sure, there we go. I was trying to think of Magma Spray for, like, 30 seconds there.
Sure.
No, what I'm saying is, like, say you're playing against a deck that has a lot of Magma Sprays in it. Kind of to Michael's point, you can be like, okay, so this one's going to protect this one, and then when this one comes into play, I'm actually going to protect this one, the one protecting the other guy. That way, they have to go through multiple layers of removal spells to get to the guy they want to get to. Which is actually better than Selfless Spirit, if you think about it.
I mean, having double Selfless Spirit is kind of the same, right? Like, it's just...
I guess that's true. That's true.
The main advantage is that it's only 1 mana, and a lot of the time, you're not really, like... A lot of the time, playing through spot removal, Selfless Spirit ends up just blanking 1 removal spell anyways, and this card kind of does the same thing.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I've been pretty happy to play Selfless Spirit at various times, and this card is sort of like a reimagined Selfless Spirit. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm going to say this a lot for this set, but I think this set has the best Magic art in the history of Magic, and this card is not an exception to that rule. And the next card has the best art in the set, and that's History of... How do you say this word?
I believe Benalia. Do you prefer that one to the red rare one?
I think so. I mean, the whole set is just...
I really like how the sagas turned out. They're really cool. I like the idea of...
gives you a different perspective of art, right? So, like, in a typical Magic card, when you see the full art, you actually see more of the card. And here we're seeing a length of art rather than a landscape of art, right?
So one of the things that I like, this is kind of...
Off topic?
It's kind of... Yeah, I mean, it's off topic of how good these cards are and constructed, but I like the idea of, instead of just seeing images of, like, beings in a world, seeing images of things that the people or creatures in this world care about. I think that's kind of cool. Because that doesn't happen very much in Magic art.
Yeah. Let's talk about History for a second, though. Because this card is... I know that this card is getting hype, but I still think it's underrated. I don't think people realize, like, how good this card is.
I can appreciate that it's, like, a little awkward sometimes, and it doesn't necessarily scale into the late game very well.
It kind of reminds me of Gideon, Ally of Zendikar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't think it's that good.
Well,
but that's obviously, like, if you thought it was as good as Gideon, that would be a very unfortunate thing.
Yeah, that's true. That would be bad for Magic. I think this is, like, a card that reminds me of Gideon that's better implemented. Like, it's going to have play patterns that Gideon had, while not being as annoying as Gideon.
Yeah, I think just...
Should we say what it does before we get too far?
Sure. So the first, when you play it, it's 1 and a white for an enchantment. When you play it, it makes it 2/2.
White, 1.
Yeah, white, 1. When you play it, it makes 2/2 with vigilance. The second turn, it makes 2/2 with vigilance. And on the third turn, you sacrifice it, and knights you control get +2/+1 until end of turn.
Yeah. First of all, I actually forgot that these knights had vigilance. So let's talk about this for a second. So you're up front, you're getting a 2/2 vigilance for 3. And then shortly after that, you get another one. And I think that you're above rate in limited by a significant margin. And then, the end result.
I mean, it's a mythic. So, like,
yeah. Yeah. And then in constructed, it's like, well, I don't get to choose when I'm getting that +2/+1, right? It's like, sure, sometimes that +2/+1 is going to result in nothing. But when you get this card, like, when you play this card on turn 4, or you play this card, like, your opponent has to warp their game plan around this. This is currently the thing that's going to matter to them.
So I think that the knights having vigilance is going to make the bonus, like, something that happens for you a lot
tangible.
More often, because there are going to be a lot of games where, like, if your creatures didn't have vigilance, the deck you're playing against would just be in a better board position than you, and you wouldn't really be able to attack. But I think a lot of the time this is going to represent, like, at least a couple of bodies and some damage at the end of that. And I think that, like, I don't know that I really have anything very exciting to say about this card. It's just very, it's very clearly quite good.
There are people that are like, this won't see play, that I've talked to.
That's probably just wrong. Like, unless we're not playing any white-based aggressive decks, there's no way this card isn't going to see quite a bit of play.
This is actually what I was thinking. They're like, well, there's not enough good knights. I'm like, does it matter if there are good knights? Like, this card by itself produces an advantage that's good enough for you in your white-based aggressive decks. That, like, okay, So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get these two knights into play, and then I'm going to attack with these two to force you to chump these guys and get my other guys in any white-based aggressive deck, whether or not those are knights.
Well, Dauntless Bodyguard is a knight, the one we were just talking about, right?
Knight of Grace is probably playable.
Benelish Marshall is probably playable.
Yeah, I think that... Right. Now, do I think that it's mono-white knights? I don't know. People are talking about how there are a lot of vampire knights, so we could see that.
Sure, but, like, it's pretty... I took about 3 seconds and came up with, you know...
Yeah.
A few other knights that I think I'd be mostly happy to play. I'm not saying, you know, I built this knight stack and played 100 games with it, and great. But, yeah, I mean, I think this card's pretty great.
Yeah, the card itself is good, and it's something that you should be thinking about, like... do you remember when we started... I think it was just after you joined Team CCMTG when we had that team, and it was the company decks were all over the place, and I think that something that people did a really poor job realizing at the beginning of that specific format, right, the BFZ whatever format, was just understanding, like, what is Wizards trying to get us to do. And when I see a card like this, it's like, okay, I know what you want me to be doing, and that's a good level zero to start with.
Sure. I mean, you can at least try it, but the flip side is, like, even if you aren't playing any other knights in your deck...
This card's good.
I think this card's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think you're asking... Like, I don't think it takes that much for this card to be quite good.
It doesn't take anything. It's a build around that builds itself. It's like... Totally fine. Let's move on really quick. I want to talk about Seal Away really quick. It's something that we skipped. I don't know how I missed this, but I want to talk about some thoughts on this. So Seal Away is 1 and a white for an enchantment with Flash. It's not going to be on your screen if you're watching the video, but when it enters the battlefield, exile target tap creature and opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield. So there are two lanes of thought on this, is that and it doesn't kill things with static abilities that people wouldn't be attacking with, is like people's immediate argument for this card's downside. And I kind of want to talk really quickly with you, Michael, about when you think about a card like Seal Away, one of the things that Wizards has done a really good job of is forcing us to get into combat in Magic recently.
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically against Scarab God, it's probably pretty bad. Against pretty much everything else, it's like...
That was my thought. It was a 2-mana answer to Hazoret pretty often, and it didn't deal with...
Always Hazoret, always Rekindling Phoenix. I mean, sometimes even, like, Llanowar Elves.
Ooh, that's dirty.
Yeah, which is kind of gross.
But I want to say that I think that when you think about removal spells, and we'll probably get into this a little bit later, I really don't like focusing on what they don't kill, but as much as, like, what does this solve a problem that my deck has, is a better question to ask than does this not solve a problem? Because you're often going to find that removal spells sometimes won't solve a problem. The better question is, what does this solve?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at a removal spell in a spoiler and going, oh man, this is a snap 4 of in every deck of this color...
That's bad for the format.
It's a really poorly designed spell, right? Like,
yeah.
The whole point of these cards in general is that, you know, cards are not good in every single situation you can imagine, because if they're good in every single situation you can imagine, deck building is incredibly uninteresting.
Yeah, I think that the fact that we haven't gotten Swords to Plowshares in a while is the point that they don't want us to have Swords to Plowshares, and... Honestly, do we want Swords to Plowshares? Like, is that magic?
I mean, that's really boring, right? And, like, I would imagine that... I was not playing Standard when Path to Exile existed, but my guess is that if you're always playing mid-range mirrors, that card has an actual drawback sometimes. It probably was still great.
Yeah, so, fun fact, I was playing Standard at that time, and there... the control deck still played 4 of it. It was not amazing against Jund. Well, it actually was okay against Jund because of Sprouting Thranax, but, like, it wasn't that amazing because of, you know, Titans and...
Sure, and, right. When you're ramping your opponent to a Primeval Titan or a Grave Titan or whatever, it...
Yeah, Grave Titan and Inferno Titan and Broodmate Dragon. But the thing is it's like, okay, this is trading this creature that I don't want to die to for you probably getting Cure Dragon early. But the thing is like, I still think that, like, Path to Exile is too good. I mean, they have, like, think of how long it's been since they printed Condemn.
But that's probably on the borderline, right? I mean, something like Condemn or Path to Exile is probably right on, like, the
right.
They haven't reprinted Path to Exile, so that should tell you something about that, right?
They haven't reprinted Condemn. That should tell you more. Like,
and it's mostly just about things have to be slightly more conditional than that.
Right. The fact that I think this is something that I talk about with players a lot that ask me questions about, you know, removal spells. It's like, they talk about, like, well, this doesn't kill this. I'm like, okay, what would you give for a Condemn right now? And they're, well, anything. Like, I would do anything for a Condemn. I'm like, that's kind of the point. Like, the fact that we lived in a world where Condemn was relegated to the sideboard tells you where Wizards want removal to be. And Sealed Away is on the push side of where they want removal to be.
It's good. Yeah. It's a really good answer. I think between that, Cast Out, Baffling End, White has a lot of really good removal options. And, I mean, part of the interesting thing, then, is how you use these together. But I think that against Red specifically, this card is pretty phenomenal. And I'm sure it'll see at least some play, and depending on how good the red decks are, it could really see a lot of play. Also, largely because those decks have no ways to remove enchantments.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously this is very good against Tazzeret, and I think that's the thing that we should highlight, right? I mean, you'd mentioned red decks here, but the... how... I personally have played decks that have zero outs to Hazoret, and this is a very good out to Hazoret.
It is. It's very clean.
Yeah, which also makes play patterns more interesting, right? Like, you're like, well, they just want to attack with their Hazoret. It's like, okay, well, if they're not attacking with their Hazoret, are they just discarding cards in their hand, or are they holding cards? Like, what is happening
right.
in that game?
No, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing, right? What really
right.
makes it
no,
interesting
I agree.
Is that if you're playing a Hazoret, there might be a situation where it's correct to not attack with it when your
Which
opponent
is way,
is only only
way
two
more...
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
no,
good
no,
gameplay.
Go ahead.
That's good gameplay, right? That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, I interrupted you there, though,
no,
so...
No, you're good. Like, but just giving you more options in deck building and then... more options in deck building leading to more interesting decisions in a game, I think that's kind of all you can hope for out of playing Magic in general, so
yep.
just having another kind of like upper tier removal spell.
I think so too. Next up, we have a card that the play design team has highlighted as a card that they specifically put in the set to combat the Hazoret decks, and that is Shalia, Voice of Plenty. It's 3 and a white for a 3/4 flyer. It's a legendary creature angel. You, planeswalkers you control, and other creatures you control have hexproof. And then it has an activated ability of 4 green-green to put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. I'll go first on this one, Michael. This card is pushed on purpose. It very much kind of does something similar to what we talked about with the Dauntless card, where it's like, you need to kill this before you have a chance to kill my other things, and it also put itself at a position where it's really hard for certain decks to deal with it.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, for toughness, it is not like, I mean, you know, the red decks can play Chandra or Glorybringer or
right.
attack with a 4/4, right? I mean, they're like, it's not like this is... completely backbreaking, but I think it having specifically 4 toughness as opposed to 3
is on purpose.
Right, it is very intentional, and
they
the
don't want you to...
the ability's pretty good. Like,
yeah, I think that they don't want you to trade up. Right, they're saying like you need to
right.
trade this equally at this slot.
Right, you need to have cards in your deck specifically to kill this card if this is the kind of thing that matters to you.
Yeah, it also makes me think, the fact that the activated ability is green makes me think that they have a specific type of deck in mind for this card. You know these green-white mid-rangey aggro decks? These big green-white aggro decks is something that we've had a lot in the past and we haven't seen in a while. You know, it feels like since, like, Fleece Mane Lion, it's been since we saw these kind of decks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful ability. Like, I would say it's expensive, but
that's
also
a good thing.
It doesn't require you, you know, because you can use it at instant speed, it doesn't require you to commit to it in quite the same way that a lot of other activated abilities do. So, I mean, I think the thing is, like, if the card didn't have an activated ability,
it wouldn't be any different.
It would still be interesting. So the activated ability is kind of all upside here. And I don't necessarily think you would have to be playing green for this to be at least a sideboard card.
I think so, too. I think that this could fit into lots of spots. And, you know, I also think that this card might be good enough to see sideboard play in something like Modern, depending on how the format shakes out. I heard some people talking about Legacy play, but I do think that Modern could be a sweet spot for this card, depending on the format. Like, right now, Modern's kind of degenerate, and so I don't think you would see this. But depending on how Modern shook up, you know, you've seen things like the 5-mana Angel from,
That was one of the Sigardas, right?
Oh, yeah, Sigarda. You've seen Sigarda in sideboards. I think this card kind of fills an interesting role, kind of like that. Let's move on to blue really quick. So we have two cards here, and there are so many great blue cards because, you know, blue is amazing. But I just want to highlight a couple on the set review because there are things that I think people will miss if they haven't been playing Magic for a long time. And both of these cards, I think, fall into that category. The first is Blink of an Eye. It's one and a blue for an instant. It has kicker of one and a blue. So kicker for its original mana cost. Return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. If the spell was kicked, draw a card. So, Into the Royal is something that has seen standard play in the past, in the Cobblade era. And this card is... Disperse itself has just seen standard play in some control decks. Even today, we played the Disperse with the discard backend. What is that card called?
Oh, Consigned to Oblivion.
Yeah, we already play Consigned to Oblivion today. So when I see a card like this, where it's a Disperse with upside, I think, okay, this is good. And this upside's actually really good.
Right.
Because what it... Oh, go ahead. No,
I mean,
thoughts.
It's just... It's nice because it scales well.
That's actually exactly right. Where the card is, okay... Early game, if I have to disperse something, I guess I'll do it. And then late game, it's like, I have all this excess mana, I get to disperse something and replace it. And for some reason, that shift is so much more powerful. Like, Consigned to Oblivion is awesome, right? Like, it's a very good card that you're, like, really happy to play. But the way that this card scales is an immediate reward rather than a later reward, right?
Yeah, Consigned to Oblivion is cool because of the way you can answer problematic permanents with it. But I think that this style of card lends itself to much more universal play. But, like,
it does.
It lends itself a lot more to, like, 2, 3, 4 copies, whereas Consigned to Oblivion really...
It's like a strict one-of.
But it's like a good one-of, but it can be a little awkward at times.
So the next card that we have on here is In Bolas's Clutches. This card is 4 blue-blue for a legendary enchantment aura. You enchant a permanent. You control that. You now control that permanent, and that permanent is now legendary. I want to emphasize something. I don't know that I've seen a version of this card in my time in Standard that didn't see some kind of Standard play. Whether it was sideboard, whether it was... I mean, there was the Coalition Reigns. Like, that card saw Bane deck play for until Cobblade came out. Like, that card was all over the place. This effect is powerful. Also, I'm a little upset that they printed this at Uncommon for Limited, but Mason and Danny will cover that in Limited Time Only. Michael, you've played a lot of this style of effect in... both main deck and side were playing your time, and you've played much worse versions of this card.
Yeah, it really depends on what is good, right? I mean, this card, like, I guess I would compare the two that I've had the chance to play most with are Exert Influence and Confiscation Coup, and both of those are relatively similar. So this one...
Sorry, what was the first one you mentioned?
Exert Influence.
Okay. That card's... Yeah, okay.
Which saw some play here and there. Not a ton, but it was good with Flip Jace. If you ever got to cast it like two turns in a row, and you often did when you had a Flip Jace, it was pretty sweet. But if the format gets mid-rangey enough, this kind of effect is... It's just like the most classic two-for-one that exists,
It's so crazy where it's like, okay... And it's like that sideboard slot that you're like, I'm playing this to gain an advantage here. It's very clean. And then depending on how mid-rangey the format gets, sometimes it creeps into a little bit of main deck play.
Yeah, you can play like one in your main or something. But like, it's just solid, right? Like, this is the kind of card where you basically know when it's not restricted by type, you pretty much can't, like... There's like no game you can play where it isn't good eventually. Like, even in an aggro matchup, if I actually draw it like as a stabilizing card or whatever, like we're at a point where I have six mana, it's almost certainly going to win you the game, right? If your answer to Hazoret is I take your Hazoret, it's like a lot better.
And the thing is obviously six mana is a lot, so it kind of depends on like how the format shakes out. And you know, the two that Michael just mentioned are both five. But, you know, one of the ones that I mentioned, right, Coalition Reigns was blue 3. It was way harder to cast than this card. And this card also, weirdly, is a legendary, which could matter in future standards, and creates a legendary, which could matter in future standards.
Right.
So it go ahead.
It's hard to say, right? It's hard to say how much that matters. It doesn't look like it matters a ton. It looks like that's mostly, like, for flavor, which is... You know,
interesting.
Kind of cool. But confiscate style effects are just like if you're... Right? When your opponent plays a Sky Sovereign, what's better than killing their Sky Sovereign? Making it your Sky Sovereign.
Yep. So Cast Down is the next card. We're going into blue.
One more thing I wanted to touch on in blue. I think Syncopate, I don't know how much this has gotten, but it's a really good one.
Yeah, I skipped it because it was a reprint. But we can talk about it.
It's like a counterspell that you can happily play four of, right? Because it's just pretty good. Even if it's
Let's
just like Clash of Wills or whatever, just like having X spell, it can be censor, it can be disallow.
I think it's so much better than Clash of Wills. So Clash of Wills was a card that we, you know, saw two of play, right? And Syncopate was a card that in way, way better blue-white control decks saw 3 to 4 of play. And the reason for that is, you know, the ability to exile the card on the stack, you know, is so good. I mean, even if it, you think it doesn't matter, right? You know, the ability to, on 2, I'm going to exile your Glintsleeve Siphoner so that you can't get it back with Scarab God is really significant.
Well, and it just scales well, right? Like, it's all the X-blue counterspells are totally playable.
And to speak to how well it scales, also, it also makes the control game really interesting, where you have to think about their Syncopate versus your Syncopate versus the spell you're casting versus maybe another Syncopate versus Negate. Like, it makes that counterspell war way more skill intensive than when you don't have this style of effect. To kind of add to that, one of the cards that's getting a lot of hype is actually Unwind. It's a blue and 2 for an instant that you can counter a non-creature spell and untap 3 lands. It's funny that I've listened to podcasts, read articles that are like, we haven't seen this effect since Urza's legacy. And it's like, I hate to bring it to you guys, but Rewind was actually reprinted not that long ago. And it wasn't very good. And... You know, if you're giving me the choice between, like, where I want to go with my counter spells, I would much rather have Syncopate in my deck than Unwind.
Yeah, I also think that Syncopate has sort of interesting... I mean, it's kind of interesting with and against Unwind, with and against Torrential Gearhulk. Like, again, when we're talking about removal spells.
Well, yeah, that's actually a good point. When you think of Torrential Gearhulk, Unwind obviously gains a lot more equity than something like Syncopate does.
Right. Well, Syncopate doesn't play very well with Torrential Gearhulk.
That's my point.
But it plays really nicely against it.
It does. Because it's a clean 2-mana answer to something that...
Right, that you'd like to...
Yeah.
Right, so it, like... I think when you're talking about, you know, counter spells, kind of like removal spells, it's fun to have choices, and it's fun to have different justifiable choices rather than just having every deck build itself.
Yeah, I think so too. Should we move on to black?
Absolutely.
So, Cast Down is our first black card. It is one in a black for an instant. Destroy target non-legendary creature. So, first of all, this is just my opinion. Any modern deck that was playing Go for the Throat, hashtag fairies, is replacing it with this card.
Interesting. What legends do you play against on a regular basis?
You Thalia, right, is probably the only one that I can think of that you're like, I really can't handle this. Whereas, you know, Go for the Throat is just completely dead against parts of the format.
Sure. It's like matchups versus cards.
Right. So, sure, you're not going to kill their Thalia with your Cast Down, but you're going to kill their Mantis Rider, right? You're going to kill their Knight of the Reliquary. So I think this card has immediate modern implications in that form. Now, these are like tier 2.5, tier 2 decks, so it's not that big of a deal, but I do think that, like, this has less of a downside in that format than Go for the Throat. Now, in standard, immediately, it wouldn't have mattered if this card was killed, destroyed target creature. It wasn't killing gods anyway. So the downside of it not killing legendary creatures is irrelevant. That being said, how many legendary creatures does this set introduce into the standard world that you're going to care about? I don't think we can know that.
It's really hard to say. I'd be a little bit nervous playing a bunch of copies of this, like, week one. But as you get a better read on the metagame, you'll have a better idea of how good this really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 2-mana removal spell, so my guess is that it's mostly in some number, but you're maybe not slamming 4 of it in all your black decks.
Not every removal spell is going to be Harness Lightning. Like... Right. Harness Lightning is, like, the best removal spell we've had in years.
Honestly, with the green base, it was, like, annoying.
It was too good. It was too good. Like, first of all, we don't deserve that. That's not a thing that we have a right to. And I think Wizards has realized that Harness Lightning a Tomb with Aether was a mistake.
Banning Lay of the Land kind of, you know.
Like, we didn't... It's funny, because I feel like they were like, we can't ban Harness Lightning. Like, that's just stupid. Like, that kills decks. Whereas if we ban a Tomb of Aether, it's like, okay, like, fix your mana on your own. But I do think that when they banned the Rogue Refiner, they're like, your Harness Lightnings are too good. Like, this spell that we want you to have access to, like we want you to kill 5/5s with this. But, like, the fact that you're killing 11/11s with this... That's unreasonable. Like, stop it.
Well, I think the real problem, and I think this was sort of a problem with Whirler Virtuoso as well, is that they were cards that were, like, designed as synergy cards that became raid cards.
Yeah.
Where they were just, like, they ended up being good because of their mana cost, where the idea was to restrict you into playing them in these shells, and then they were insane in these shells, but, like, even... They just were getting too powerful, right? Like, Harness Lightning didn't really have downside because you always had excess energy. And World of Virtuoso was just too good because excess energy.
It's funny. I, like, won the... You remember that season that I was, like, on Jeskai Control, right? And, like, I was on Jeskai Control specifically for Harness Lightning because, like, my Aether Hub... My Harness Lightning's fixed my Aether Hubs. My Glimmer of Genius has fixed everything. And, it was so easy to get access energy. And when we look at a card like Cast Down, it's like, we don't know what the format's going to look like. We don't know how many legendary creatures there are going to be.
Right.
What we do know is that 2-mana removal that's pretty close to unconditional is pretty good. Now, Wizards has done a what you could say is a good job in the past of like not allowing us to have really good two mana removal spell. They printed Doomblade during Mono Black's reign, and then after that reign, they printed
there was like Ultimate Price as well.
Ultimate Price, thank you. That's the card I was looking for. So like they did a really good job of saying you get this or this, but it's not amazing in either of these times. And this could be another example of that, but I don't think that's true. I actually think that it's too hard, and this is an opinion that somebody will quote me on in, you know, a year and a half, and I'll look like a complete idiot. But I think it's actually too hard to get the requisite number of legendary creatures in your deck and keep your deck consistent to make this card bad.
So my thought would be that this card will be frustrating to play sometimes. My guess is that if your opponent is playing more than about 8 or 10 total legendary creatures in their deck, you're just going to have games where this spell is uncastable. So I think your game-to-game variance is higher with this, but it's not. I would be surprised if someone could play enough legendary creatures for this to be archetypically bad.
I think so, too. It's just tough. Like, we kind of mentioned Modern, right? Where it's like, you know, they're playing 7 Thalias, and sure, you're never going to kill one of those Thalias, but whatever. Like,
except for the game where you draw double cast down and they draw all legendary, right? But that's,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Just magic.
But you were you going to win the game where like they went turn 2 Thalia, turn 3 Thalia with your deck with 2 mana removal spells? Like, probably not. Like, they had a really good draw against you. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'm interested to see how this one does. I'm not super confident in it being great, but it is, I mean, 2 mana instant speed removal, and
yeah,
that's always at least fairly good.
Demon Lord Belzaluk? Is that how you say that?
Let's see. Demon Lord
Belzanok. Belzanok is Belzanok is being put in my Belzanlok. Mason was wrong.
Yeah, there's an L.
Yeah, there's an L there. Four black for a 6/6, so a 6/6 for 6. Flying Trample, when it enters the battlefield, exile cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-land card, then put that card into your hand. That's interesting. If the cards convert to mana for greater, repeat this process. What do you do with the land cards?
They
stay exiled.
Yeah,
okay.
Everything else stays exiled.
That's interesting. I actually didn't realize you couldn't draw lands off of this. So,
yeah.
I already have an immediate thought. So, I've heard so many people talk about this card. And I want to be clear about something. Consigned to Oblivion, Glimmer of Genius, like, the blue-black control decks already play a ton of cards that cost 4 or more. That's already a thing. Do I think this card replaces one Gearhulk? I think the answer is yes.
I
think this card replaces all of your Gearhulks or your Scarab Gods or whatever? The answer is no. I think this card is literally a, quote, good enough card in some decks. But I also think this card really shines in mid-range decks more than control decks.
I agree.
Where people are really trying to fit this into, like, the control shell. And when I think of this card in, like, blue-black control, I'm like, I'll cut a Gearhulk for one of these, maybe.
Maybe. I'm not even sold on that. Like, this card, though, where it's insane is when you're playing... I mean, you're playing an Abzan Mirror, and you slam this guy on 6 and draw 2 Siege Rhinos and an Abzan Charm. And your opponent goes, well, now I'm dead.
Yeah, now that you lose. That's my thought, too. So many people focus on this card as, like, a control finisher, and I'm like Michael. I'm like, I'm going to play this, I'm going to draw one card, and I'm going to be really happy.
No, this is way more like playing a Titan.
It is. That's
this card is way more like Primeval Titan style. I mean, not the same effect, but like,
yeah,
it's this big thing that you can like kind of ramp into almost. And
yeah.
God, like it's so it always hits a spell. You cantrip into a spell, but the times where you're like, draw some 5 mana big fatty and a removal spell. This was my top deck for the turn. We were both hellbent. Go. And your opponent's just like, yep, I'm dead.
I think so, too. That's exactly what I think. Like, I can see what people are trying to do with Control because of, like, that consigned to Oblivion, that Glimmer of Genius. You know, they want to play more split cards with it. And I think you're trying to be too cute. I think what you want to be doing with this card is just be like, I'm jamming this. Good luck answering a 6-6 for 6. This also,
is,
I got...
Right. This is Miracle Bonfire.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree with you. I think this card is totally like this 2 of in mid-range decks that's sweet, and that's the end of this story.
But, it's going to be insane, right? Like, I think this card is extremely good.
In mid-range.
Yeah. I'm not really trying to play this in a control deck. I don't want to tap out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is... This card is the top end of your mid-range deck. Kind of like, do you remember like how you like would play Elspeth or you would play like Chandra in mid-range? This is that. Right? It's just like, all right, I'm going to play this. I got an advantage already. Go. Oh, you didn't kill this? Well, you died then.
Right. When you're playing matchups where the main thing that's happening is you're both playing kind of big threats and then you're removing each other's big threats, this is just like the card you most want to play, right?
Yeah, it's like a huge threat that gives you answers to their huge threats,
right,
or more huge threats. It's everything you want in that mid-range mirror.
I mean, imagine the times you reveal the second one to the first one of these. Your
opponent's
just like,
the game's,
well,
the game's over.
This seems bad, right? I mean, any deck where you can afford to play, you know, 6 or 8 creatures where you can draw off this, that you can like hit off this and continue going, when you have like a quote unquote good Demon Lord Beltsamok, it's just going to be game ending.
Yeah, and I think that the important thing to know is like, well, don't you lose life? It's like, well, in those matchups, like your life totals swing in huge chunks.
Right.
So if that huge chunk is me drawing 3 cards, that's a good chunk of life for me to take.
Yeah, I mean I just feel like there are gonna be some percentage of the time where you paid 6 mana for essentially this dude plus Painful Truths and it was a great Painful Truths. And like,
well, it was a Painful Truth that was all spells, right? It's like...
It was a Painful Truth that was all 4-mana spells, right? Like,
it was all haymakers.
You just, like, right, yeah, you just... When this card draws into, like... When this card is good, it's going to be phenomenal. And when it's not good, think about it this way. Like, a lot of the time, if you exile... Like, if we're both kind of close to Hellbent, and you exile, like, land, Llanowar Elves, think about the 3 draw steps you just avoided, right? When this card is at its worst, it's, like... often saving you from
it's
like,
a good point.
Flooding out or whatever.
You're already at 6 mana. Do you really care about those lands that you exile that you don't get? The answer is almost definitely
right,
no.
Right, no. Like, removing lands from the top of your deck is actually valuable, even though it's only, like, you didn't know they were there, so it doesn't feel like it, but then you start thinking about it, and you're like, well, yeah, I mean, I was going to draw those and probably die.
Yeah, I had a match that I won at the PPTQ this week where I cast a Commune with the Dinosaurs, and... I revealed a Rootbound Crag, and my opponent's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I'm not, because I know what those 5 cards were.
You should have seen what my draw steps were.
Like, that was an amazing Commune with Dinosaurs.
Sure. I literally could not have won this game if I didn't cast that spell, so.
The next card we have is Divest. This is 1 black for a sorcery. Target player reveals their hand. You choose an artifact or creature card. The player discards that card. So, this card has gotten a lot of hype, and I want to just bring people down.
Yeah, I think this card's bad.
This card is worse than... Is it Despise? Is the name of the...
Despise. It might be worse than Harsh Scrutiny. It's worse than cards people don't play.
Yeah, I don't know what people love about this card, but I just wanted to highlight, like... If there's a... Okay. So, tomorrow... This card is probably okay, right? Where, like if this card was in standard today, and there were not new decks introduced, you might actually play this to get rid of the 3-mana Godfarrow's Gift card. What is it?
Gate?
Gate. I mean, you actually might... But, like, if you don't hit Gate, you're still hitting a creature for them to put into the graveyard. Like,
This card, people, seems bad.
It seems so bad to me. Here's the thing, is they've printed so many versions of this card. The best one of them was Despise, and it still wasn't good.
Yeah, it's been bad every time, and it, you know, fool me 37 times, shame on everyone.
Like, how good does an artifact or creature have to be where you're willing to spend one mana to guess if it's in their hand?
I mean, the real problem is that, like, okay, so Duress is a good sideboard card because in the matches where you want to side it in, you actually want it in your deck. This card is bad because it's a sideboard card that you never want to side in because discard spells are bad in the matchups this is good in.
Right. So when I born in Duress, it's like... Well, let's talk about that. So the reason that I born in Duress is because I need to get the counter magic out of your hand to resolve my spells, whether they're my counter spells or whether they're my haymakers, right?
Right. I mean, or draw spells or whatever it is.
Whatever. Whatever. I need to get specifically counter magic or permission spells, like removal spells, or even spells that, like, big haymakers like planeswalkers that I don't have an answer to in my hand. Like, Duress is a wide net of cards. And this card, while is artifacts and creatures, like, let's say that this was discard target non-instant or sorcery. That's a way different card. And maybe that card sees play, but I still don't even think so.
Mostly because I would just take your lands.
Oh, sure. Shut up. I hate you. But my point is like, Duress does a very specific thing. There's a reason this is legacy play. This card isn't...
This is not good. We've seen this card. We already know it's not good.
I know, but people... I have to highlight it, man. Vicious Offering, though, is the most... It is, in my opinion, one of the most interesting cards in the set. So it's one in a black for instant. It has care to sacrifice a creature. Target creature gets -2/-2. If you sacrifice a creature, it gets -5/-5. This is the kind of card that goes in one deck and is, like, amazing in that one deck.
Yeah, if there's something like Aristocrat style that ends up popping up, this card is really good. Otherwise, it's probably
unplayable.
Any play.
In those decks, though, it's like, those moments where LSV is, you know, top hitting a Pro Tour with an unplayable deck. This is one of the reasons that happens.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
so what is Aristocrat style decks for those who don't know, Michael?
Sure. So generally decks that either benefit from having creatures in the graveyard or, like, abusing dice triggers.
Yeah. And we don't have dice triggers right now, which makes this card really interesting to me. Like, is this a pre to the next set? Like, where does this card fit in? Because the kicker on this of sacrificing a creature... Now, it could just be a limited card, right? It could just be like, all right, my token has gotten in. Good job, token. Yeah. Or it could be a pre to something else, and I just wanted to highlight it.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one if we end up going there. I mean, one of the things that I like about a card like this compared to something where it's just an additional cost is that even in the decks that want the cards of this style, you don't necessarily want to sacrifice every creature in your deck, so compared to something like Bone Splinters, this is a much more playable removal spell.
Yeah. Let's go on to red really quick. We have Jaya's Immolating Inferno. So the first time I read this card, I did not realize it was a legendary sorcery, and I was like, this is the best fireball ever printed.
By so
much. I was like, this can't be real.
I mean, that being said, it doesn't really seem like that unreasonable to
Yeah. So then I had to turn it off, right? I had to turn off my hype. Because everybody knows that I love fireballs. You know, like, I'm the Todd Anderson of fireball magic cards. But this card is red, red X for a legendary sorcery. So you can only cast this if you control another legendary creature or a planeswalker. And then it deals X damage to each of three targets. Okay. If this card gets turned on, it's gas.
I feel like you're going to lose this in limited, like, an unreasonable amount of the time. Like, this is going to like, one of the most hated cards to play against in limited.
Oh, yeah. And as somebody who, you know, touted Clan Defiance in standard, I mean, if you turn... it's obviously not Clan Defiance, right? Because you have to turn it on. But, like, you had to turn Clan Defiance on, too, right? Because they had to, like, hit different types of things. I don't know, man. Like... I don't know that it'll see play right away, but I would be shocked if this card did not see play by the end of its life cycle.
I agree. It's just, like, this is not what you want. If you're, like, close to it parity, and
it's not what you want to see.
Mid to, like, the mid-later part of the game, I just don't see any way you're ever beating this.
It kind of reminds me of, like...
This is the card that your opponent reveals to stop their Demon Lord Beldson Lockchain, where you're just
and then
like,
you're
all
like,
right,
well,
I concede, that seems good.
You're like, yeah, exactly. It's like...
Right? You're just like, yep, not coming back from this 12 for 1. Right? I don't know. I imagine conceding to this card, like, a lot of the time that it's cast.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just literally laughed so hard, I went back and unplugged my mic. Here, like, I'm glad the card doesn't do what I think it did, because it would be unfun. And I'm glad that it has a build-around clause. But kind of like Michael said, it's probably still going to be unfun in the games that you lose to it.
I mean, I think it's, like, it's kind of interesting, and it's going to really warp like what you have to cast your removal spells targeting sometimes if this card becomes popular. You're really going to be like, well, you know, my opponent's Planeswalker has more loyalty than they have, you know, or the same amount of loyalty as they have life, or like one less or something. And you're like, well, I better kill this Planeswalker so I don't die to this card. But
where this card doesn't even make you make that choice.
Right, but... Well, no. I mean, like, if your opponent has this card in their deck, there are going to be times where you're going to, like...
Oh, you have to kill
their Planeswalker. I could put
you
to one, or I could kill your Planeswalker. Better kill
so
the
I
Planeswalker.
Don't. Yeah, so I don't lose to this. Yeah, that's actually an interesting decision tree, whereas other decision trees might be less interesting.
Yeah, it's true, but, like, I think this is the kind of card where if you can just survive until the middle of the game and cast this reliably... It's really hard to imagine losing a lot of games where you cast this for, like, 6 total mana.
I agree. The next card that we have on here is Shivan Fire. So this card is 1 red for an instant. It deals 2 damage to target creature. If it was kicked, it deals 4, and it has a kicker for 4. So it's literally Burst Lightning without dealing damage to players. There was an episode of Constructed Charisma where it said Burst Lightning should literally be in every standard format. This is acceptable. I do wish it dealt damage to planeswalkers. I'm okay with it not dealing damage to creatures or to players. But that being said, this card, I think that I said on that podcast that Burst Lightning is the perfect magic card. And I think that this is less perfect because I actually think the Burst Lightning goes in aggro decks, control decks, and midrange decks. And the reason that it's perfect is because it's still elegant, and it has deck building costs. I don't think this card goes in many aggro decks, which I do have a problem with. But that being said, I think that this effect and this card is actually beautiful. And the reason that I think that is that it rewards you building your deck to play around it. It rewards you for building your deck to play it. And it punishes decks that don't think about it. And, you know, Mason posted a post today about the mana system in Hearthstone compared to other games, and it kind of devolved. But I actually think that this card and this style of card specifically really rewards Magic's mana system. A card like this would be completely broken in Hearthstone. Like, it wouldn't even be fun.
Sure.
You wouldn't even have to think about it.
The equivalent card, right? Like,
right, yeah.
Whatever, I mean, I don't play enough Hearthstone to tell you about it. But,
something like Kicker
doesn't work.
Yeah, where in Magic it's like, oh, okay, like, I get what's happening here. I'm not going to die to this stupid goblin guide, and I'm also have an answer in the same card to Glorybringer.
Right.
And I think that that's important.
Yeah, it's nice. I think that, like, this card specifically is fine. It's not, like, especially good. I mean, obviously we've played with Burst Lightning before, and it's, you know, also a fine, not, like, out-of-control good magic card.
Well, Burst Lightning, we have to remember, was literally always in standard with Lightning Bolt.
Sure. Yeah, that's probably true. But I don't think of Burst Lightning as being extremely overpowered or anything.
I don't either. Like I said, I think it's a perfect magic card.
But,
like, when I think
but
of...
But this card, if you decide you're, like, scared of Mono Red being too good or whatever, mm-hmm. this is, like, pretty acceptable.
And I think that it does the right things. There's a real cost to turning your removal spell into a fireball to kill a creature, right? Like, I'm saying, like, the four kicker is the equivalent of saying fireball your dude.
Right. But sometimes that's what you need, right? Having flexible spells makes games more interesting because it gives you more choices. And it gives you more choices in a way that isn't overwhelming, right? Like, it's not like we suddenly have access to, like, our opponent's full deck list in hand and, like, all this other stuff. We just, okay, so I can spend this early to kill a small creature, or I can wait and maybe kill a bigger creature.
And it's important to note that, like, when I top deck this in the late game, that it has relevant text. And one of the things that I think that... if you listen to Mark Walsrudder, he talks about, like, they messed up kicker by doing kicker, because every ability can be kicker. Like, you can make 1,000 kickers. But that being said, I would if Shivan Fire or Burst Lightning was in every Magic set, I would be literally 100% okay with that.
I also think this is a really, like, I know we're not really talking about Limited, but I think cards like this are really, really good for Limited. Much like Cycling is really good for Limited.
Yes.
I think just having cards play, having more modal spells,
increases the
skill testing ability of Limited, and I think just makes the games less frustrating, because having cards like this at Common will punish the really, really aggressive decks without being, like, impossible to main deck.
Yeah. So we are skipping Siegegate Commander because obviously some mid-range decks will play that. Maybe some aggro decks will play it. I want to get right into... Honestly, this is my favorite card in the set. I don't understand why people don't understand how good this card is, Michael. I've had people be like, this isn't even playable, and I don't understand. I need your help. So, Red 2 for a 4-4 flyer. Kicker 3, if you kick it, make another 4-4 flyer. What? Michael, what do you think of this card?
I think people want to be more excited by mythics. You know what I mean?
What?
So what I would say is this card is, like, it is just a good rate card. The fact that, like, you can play a 4-4 flyer for 4, and in a lot of these, like, kind of mid-rangey, slightly aggressive-leaning red decks, it's just, like, it's good. But when people are looking for, like, cool lines of text, and this card
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't a card that you look at and you're like, oh man, I'm going to build my deck around this guy. But that's sort of the reason this card is good, is because you don't do that. You just play it.
That's exactly right. I don't have to build my deck around this. Am I playing Hour of Promise? Cool. Am I playing red? Cool. This literally will go in my deck. Am I playing we'll get into the green ramp spell in a little bit, the 3-man, like, even then, like, am I playing, like, a monster's deck?
Sure, great, I cast, like, it on 4, it's fine, I cast it on 7,
if it's on
7,
it's fine. Like, the card is fine all around, and, you know, it was funny, the other day I tweeted, Michael, I think you were actually on the podcast when Glorybringer was spoiled, and people were like, it's no Stormbreath Dragon, it won't even see standard play, it's not good enough. It's literally defined standard, and we were pretty on top of that, which I think that most people who, like, understood Magic were. But there's something to be said about, like, a card that's just good on rate. Like, there's not a spot where this card is terrible. And if it is, it's because 4-4 flyers are terrible for 4. And if that's true, is that standard?
It's pretty different.
Yeah,
be a surprise. I mean,
right?
I think that
people,
like,
people play Thunderbreak Regent, and this card is at least 2 times better than that card.
Yeah, I mean, that card had, like, minor upside. This card has, like... And, I mean, yeah, there were times where, like, you know, if your opponent went, like, Thunderbreak Region into Thunderbreak Region, like, it could kind of get you every once in a while, but I think the nice thing is that this card isn't, like, you know, you don't look at it and you're like, oh, man, I gotta play a bunch of dragons. Oh, you're gonna have to play a bunch of copies of it, right? I mean, its biggest downside specifically is that you might not be able to play more than two of it.
Right. Its biggest downside is being legendary, so it's like, can I fit that third copy in?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is just, like, it's kind of legendary in the same way that something like Heart of Kirin is legendary.
Well, like, hold on. It's important to note that the token also is legendary. So, like, if they kill this, you actually can't kick the second one to get an extra dragon. Well,
kind of, but, like, if we're in a
spot
where...
But also, you still have a 4-4 dragon in play.
Yeah. Like, it depends on what games we're playing, but most of the time, like... Complaining that I can't play the second 4-4 flying is like because they can't kill the first one. I mean, that maybe precludes you from playing four, but it's kind of a first world problem, right? You're like, oh man, my 4-4 is so board dominating and they have no way to answer it and I can't play a second. Like, I mean, I get that,
but then you
also get rewarded then for holding it for a couple more turns because it makes a double 4-4 when you play it the second time.
And I think, I like to call this the Elspeth problem, where people were like, or even the Jace problem, right? Where it's like, can I actually play a four of this card? It's like, yeah, because when they don't answer the first one all the way, they're probably dead.
Yeah, and I don't know that this card, I'm not so high on a 4-4 that I think, you know, I need to play four mana, 4-4 flyings, but I think this card is pretty clearly, like, at least pretty good, and it's low effort pretty good, which is
everything you've ever wanted.
Like, this is a lazy card for me to say is good. It's an easy card to say it's good because
for some reason
at least fine, right? It's like a 4-4-4-4 with pretty good upside.
I think that what you said at the beginning of this is pretty correct, is that for some reason people really want cards to be good, and they want to be the only one to know that they're good. So when they're not the only one to know that they're good, they're like, nah, it's not that good, because, like, I didn't discover it. It's like, no, sometimes cards are just good. We all know that they're good, and that's okay.
People mostly want mythics to read, like, Scarab God and, like, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and this card isn't very, like, exciting, but... I mean, it's a 4-4 that you play, and it doesn't get Glorybringered, and, you know.
Should we talk about Oath of Nissa now?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this card's not Oath of Nissa. It's Adventurer's Impulse. It's one green for a sorcerer. You look at the top three cards, you may reveal a creature or a land card, put it in your hand, put the rest on the bottom. Okay. Michael, Oath of Nissa was really good. Like, really, really good. Way better than anybody, I think, could have recently said it would have been. For Standard.
Mm-hmm.
What is this card?
Well, what is Commune with Nature? Is it only a creature?
I actually don't even know what that card is.
Creature, okay. I mean, I think this card is, like... I wouldn't be surprised to see it see play, but Oath of Nissa benefited a lot from being a permanent.
And fixing your mana for things like Chandra.
It did that a little bit sometimes, but I think the main thing was, like, it got flickered by Felidar Guardian. It
saw play out of that, right? Like, it saw play in... I mean, I guess that if you think... No, you're probably right, right? Because, like, that, like, it got flickered, grabbed Nahiris, grabbed Saheelis, grabbed...
That, I mean,
you know,
it's, that was its best deck, but I think... Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not like the mana fixing never mattered, but I don't think the mana fixing was, like, draw to the card.
Sure. So what decks want this?
That being said, that card also got Planeswalkers, so... This card only gets lands and creatures. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say what decks really want Adventurer's Impulse. You would probably have to build a deck. Something.
I mean, I'm
that
playing
valued having. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think this card, it's okay, but I certainly... It's worse than Oath of Nissa, and it's not like Oath of Nissa was blowing the doors off.
Yeah.
Right? Is it a playable-ish Magic card? Absolutely. Is it a card that I'm like, you know, can't wait to put in every deck?
Let's talk about things similar to this that you play now. So right now, I already play Commune with Dinosaurs. But that's 5 cards.
Sure.
So does me not having to build around it make Impulse better? Does it make it 2 cards less seen better?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is that you're really priced into, like, so with Commune with Dinosaurs, I would say the disadvantage is that obviously you're having to play Dinosaurs. The upside is that when you're looking at 5 cards, you don't really have to be that careful about, like, playing 10 other spells in your deck. If you're playing, like, you know, 25 lands, 15 spells, a couple of Planeswalkers, I don't think you can play this card.
Well, you know, and...
Right, like,
and
you really need to be in, like, a very creature-centric deck.
You do. And one of the things that Oath of Nissa did is it let you cheat on lands. It's hard to know. And I think that the way that you figure this out is, like, by playing with it. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's it's...
But my thought is that it's probably going to miss. Like, I think this card will not see standard play. But if I'm wrong, I think I'm wrong by a pretty narrow margin, because I think it's close.
I think it's mostly irrelevant whether this card will see standard play. Which
well,
is maybe maybe a more telling thing to say anyways, right? Like, I just don't know that this card is... We've basically had a slightly better version of this card, and it was fine.
Okay. Yeah. Growth from the Ashes is next. It's a green and 2. It's a sorcery. It's a kicker for 2. Search your library for a basic land card. Put that card put it onto the battlefield. Then shuffle your library. If it was kicked, you search for 2 basic lands instead. So these lands are coming to play untapped. Michael, you're the biggest ramp hater I know. What does this do? Where does this land for you?
We were talking about it before. You were kind of comparing it to Harrow.
I think that it's close to Harrow, but it's hard because I think that Harrow was good because it was an instant.
Yeah, and it kind of lets you, like, double spell in a way, right? Like, you could, like, end step ramp, then cast something.
Yeah. Here's the thing about this card. This card is... I think that this card is good enough, but I think that what you did was really good. So, when we think about things like Cultivate or Nissa's Pilgrimage, they fit into decks that don't deserve ramp spells, right? Where it's like, why did I get to draw 3 cards and also ramp in my deck? Right? When we think of Nissa's Pilgrimage. Cultivate might be the same way. Cultivate, unfortunately, was in a world where, you know, the draw spells and things like that were way too good for that to ever matter. But if it was in there today, it would be like, why does green get Divination? This card doesn't have that. But what it does have is it has scalability. And it also puts lands into play untapped. So let's say late game, I want to... Or even early game, right? Like, if I play... I think this card goes really well with the card that we talked about earlier, with Shivan Fire. I think that this card and Shivan Fire are, like, best friends. Where it's like, I get to play this, I get to play a Shivan Fire to advance my game plan, and then late game, it ramps me into the good part of my Shivan Fires. Like, the whole thing works together. But to your point that you said before the show, it also only goes in one deck. Like, I have to play this in a dedicated ramp deck. Whereas with something like Nissa's Pilgrimage, I just gotta play that in a green, like a base green deck.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. Like, the fundamental problem is that, like, 3 mana ramp 1 just isn't very good. It's like the bare minimum of what can be played. And like you were saying, it's like they're sort of, you know, kicking the can ever closer to the edge or whatever, right? It's like, okay, so if we make it a little bit better, can you play it? If we make it a little bit better, can you play it? If we make it a little, like, and this is like one more kind of nudge past where we've been with these spells. And I think this card is okay, but I think we have to want to play a pretty rampy deck.
You do. You do.
I like that it takes you from 3 to 5, so if you draw, like, 2 copies, you can...
Ramp into ramp?
Yeah, or if you wanted to play, like, this and Gilded Lotus or something, you can, like, this into Gilded Lotus. Something like that is kind of cool.
Or Gilded Lotus into this into something else.
Something, here, yeah, Zakama yeah. or whatever. Some.
Here's my thought on this as the resident ramp expert. I worry about a few things. Michael talked about kind of our pre-conversation, and he talked about, like, Wizards is trying to figure... They did this with Verastus Contempt too, right? They're, like, trying to figure out, like, can we get you to play with this effect at this price point? And they've been trying for 3-mana rampant growths for a while now. Like, they really want to figure out, like, how to get it in the sweet spot to get us to play with them. And this is not a 3-mana rampant growth, and the reason it's not is because it keeps the land untapped. But the thing is that in order for that to matter, you have to have spells you want to cast for one, for a single color. Now, maybe it's mono green, maybe it's 2 colors, right? Maybe it's red, maybe it's black. I mean, I don't think we have a black one. But you have to care about things. And then, also, you have to care about what it ramps into. So, one of the things that people pretty often ask me is, like, Spencer, why doesn't Hour of Promise play? Spencer, why doesn't Hour of Promise play? It saw play at the end of the last form. Why doesn't he play now? And as you look at ramp spells, the larger the format, the more options you have to ramp into. And they also have to line up in cost. So a really good example of this is Sphere of the Suns into Solemn Silmaricum into Primeval Titan. We had, Birds of Paradise into 3-mana ramp spell into Acidic Slime. They have to line up in the correct order, right? So a really good example of this is you played a 2-mana ramp creature into Explosive Vegetation so that you could play your Dragonlord Atarka, right? They have to line up. And when they don't line up, it's not helpful for you. So today, when you think about, like, why does an Hour of Promise play, Spencer? It's like, well, what are you ramping into at 7 mana? Is it worth playing Hour of Promise? And the same thing is going to be true of Growth of Ashes, and the same thing will be true of Gilded Lotus, where it's like, what do I get by casting the spell? Because I'm taking a turn off to have this Haymaker next turn. And that Haymaker has to matter. Growth of Ashes into Hour of Promise, awesome. Like, I'm there. But what does Hour of Promise get me? What is the kicked Growth of Ashes get me? And that's what we have to think about.
Right. I think that that's been the bigger problem with these ramp decks for a minute now. It's just hard to... Like, the things we're ramping into don't straddle the line of castable without kind of an inordinate amount of ramp spells and, like, complete unbeatability in the way that they need to.
Should we talk about the return of sweet ramp spell, though? And that's Llanowar Elves. 1 green for a 1/1. Tap, add a green to your mana pool. So I think that this card opens up all kinds of things. One of the things that people love to message me, Llanowar's back, are we going to ramp? I really, really, really hate 1-mana ramp creatures in my ramp decks.
It's like a mid-range card, right?
I think these really belong in mid-range decks. Every time somebody sends me a list with 4 of these and 4 random, like, 4 Hour of Promise, I'm probably going to tell you you're wrong. Like, there's no... It's pretty hard to convince me that that's correct. That being said, I'm pretty into... Turn 1, this. Turn 2, Goblin Rabble Master, if that's a card we have, right?
Right, just like snowball-y right. 3-drop.
Right, and I think that that's kind of where we have to be with these style of effects. Are we in agreement on this? Can we move on?
Yeah, that's mostly where I am, too. You know, it's a really good card. Like, Elvish Mystic was pretty crazy last time it was in Standard, and I think that having this kind of effect is, it's definitely worth looking at.
Territorial Allosaurus is next. It's two green green for a 5/5 dinosaur. It's got kicker 3. When it enters the battlefield, if you kicked it, fight. So I want to mention this card because the dinosaur's deck, everybody's complained about, is super close. And the problem is like there's no good four drops that you want to play, and also like there's no good top end. I think this does a good job of both. I don't know. I here's the thing is like I don't know what is this better than, what does it replace, what goes on there, and it's certainly not better. Like if we look at how dinosaur decks are built today, they're all playing Rekindling Phoenix. I don't think this card is better than that card.
No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I don't think that's particularly close.
So are we? Does this card fundamentally change how we're building those decks? And that's got to be a question you answer by playtesting. But it is way better than the other options you have at 4 mana, and way better than the late game options you have in Dinosaurs.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of this guy, but he can maybe bridge the gap a little bit. If you want to build ramp decks with Llanowar Elves, I want to play this card.
Yeah, a lot of people compared it to me. Like, a lot of people have been like, hey, Spitz, you played a lot of Pelucranos decks. What do you think of this? And they've compared it to Pelucranos. I really don't like that comparison. And the reason why I don't like it is Pelucranos split its mana to fight things, right? And you have to pay all of this mana up front to fight things. And that's a huge difference. I mean, if you look at even, like, let's take this to the base level and talk about Thraben Inspector, right? Where it's like, it's sure. Elvish Visionary, but you split the mana and have to pay one right. more.
But if that had been a kicker, it would have been, like, pretty
way
bad.
Worse. Yeah. You wouldn't have ever played the card. And that's something that we have to think about. So I'm optimistically okay with this card. But there are so many worlds where this card just sees zero play.
Yeah, I think this one might end up being more of a limited all-star than a card we're playing a lot in Constructed.
Let's go on to multicolored. We have the Cinderwind. I can't even say the beginning of this card. But it's one, a blue and a red for a 2/2 as flying in haste. It's a legendary human wizard. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, wizards you control get +1/+1. So the reason that I want to mention this card was kind of to just wrap up wizards in a bow. If wizards is playable, this card is playable. So we have like wizards lightning. We have the blue one that turns into counterspells. I'm a little skeptical about wizards, man.
I can tell you almost with certainty that they would not print counterspell, lightning bolt, and this card in a deck that was good.
That's kind of how I feel. It's like, you're telling me to play all these cards together, and there's no way you would let me play all these cards together.
Right. If it actually worked, this wouldn't be available to you, so it probably isn't good. That's kind of lazy thinking, but, like, this would be the most winding constrictor, deck to ever be, like, good.
It,
you know what I mean? Where you, like,
it'd be,
you
like,
look at a
better
card
than Delver.
But you know what I mean, right? It's like, if you're going to, like, pre-build decks for people, where you're just like, you should play all the cards that say wizard on them. I would just be shocked if this deck was good.
I would too. Like,
that's something
looked,
they don't really do.
Yeah, they didn't print like really, really good cheap wizards on purpose. Like, there's a reason there's not a one mana insane wizard. Because no. Like, you just don't get that. So I'm glad we agree on that. Here's a card that we might disagree on, and that's Oath of Teferi. We want to read that one.
Oath of Teferi says you can so it flickers something when it ETBs. It returns at the beginning of the next end step, and then
it's
get to use
blue
loyalty abilities twice. It costs 5 blue, white, 3.
Yes. This oath is kind of weird to me. Like,
yeah.
The reason that, like, this is the kind of card where, like, I play a 2 of these and I'm, like, really, really happy when I draw one, but it also has to be so specific in a deck.
You have to be really sure, like, what you're trying to do with this card, which makes it really hard to evaluate. Like, right now, we're not really playing a lot of Planeswalkers in general.
No, they also haven't, like, it, when I looked at this set, we're going to talk about a Planeswalker in a minute, but one of the things that I saw was, like, value Planeswalkers. Like, it feels like it was really funny because we had, like, Jason on Nyxalis and they were, like, the same card, right? And then now it's, like, a value Planeswalker is, like, crazy. It's like, wait, I just get to play this card and, like, play a value game? Like, this just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
the closest to that we have is Nissa, and she sees zero play because of the way that the format's shaped up.
Yeah, there just aren't a lot of, like, I mean, I guess I don't know. There are a couple of Planeswalkers in this format that are kind of interesting with it, but I don't know. I'm skeptical of this card.
That's kind of how I feel. Like, if this card is good, I think we'll know pretty quickly if it's good. And if it's not, I think it will just never see the light of day.
I think this is the kind of card that, if it were good, would not be very fun.
Oh, interesting. Because when I, like, do you remember the deck that Danny wanted to play at the Pro Tour? The, what's the seven, the collected company for Planeswalkers?
Sure, to play the Gatewatch.
Yeah. Like, this is the kind of card that, had he had him to play the Gatewatch, he might have been super happy.
Sure, but that deck was, like, pretty clearly not good, right? So.
Right, but had that deck had this card, right? Like, it's not that you can activate one Planeswalker abilities twice, it's that you can activate all Planeswalker's abilities twice.
Right, so it, like, but what I'm saying is that I think this card, if you can actually build a good Planeswalker deck that, like, lets you play all these Planeswalkers and then activate their abilities twice, this card isn't going to be very fun.
I mean, and that deck's going to be miserable, right?
Right, and otherwise the card's probably just not good. So my assumption would be that it's not good.
Well, let's talk about a Planeswalker that could go in that deck, and that's Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. It's 3, a white, and a blue. It comes in with 4 loyalty. You can +1 to draw a card, and then untap 2 lands at the beginning of the next end step. You can -3 to return an all-land permanent to its owner's hand, 3rd from the top. That's powerful. And then you can -8 to get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile it a permanent an opponent controls. We kind of talked about, like, we don't get value Planeswalkers.
This is a good one.
Yeah, this is just a good value card. This is something that, like, kind of the control decks missed this year, it feels like.
Yeah, like, I remember people playing decks, you know, with Dovin Bond or whatever, and this guy's just, like,
1,000 times.
Yeah, he's just, like, pretty solid, right? He's, like, plus draw a card and be able to hold up Counterspell or Seal Away. He can commit to memory your opponent's Scarab God or Hazoret or whatever, or Rekindling Phoenix, whatever it may be. And if he gets the 8, you win the game.
Yeah, whenever you draw a card, exile. So every draw step, you get to exile something. So you get a 2-for-1 on each of your draw steps. And it's
God forbid you just cast an actual draw spell.
Yeah, I mean, I was just say, if you Glimmer of Genius, it's, like, the best thing in the world.
Yeah, so, I mean, as his ultimate reads, you win. And his plus is pretty good, and I think his minus... Like, this card is, like, basically Obnixilis or Jace or whatever.
It's a 5-mana Planeswalker that we were used to, like, a year ago.
But it's like, a good version of it, though, right? Like, I think untapping the land's actually pretty good.
Yeah, especially when we think about that... We talked about that kicker spell earlier, right? Or we talked about the white removal spell, right? So we've already talked about 2 spells that fit really well into his plus ability.
Like, Into the Royal or Seal Away are both pretty good with him. So's, like, potentially Syncopate even, Negate, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think this guy's just,
Scatter.
Like, pretty... He's just pretty decent, right? Like,
yeah.
he's not exciting, but, you know, yeah, I've played with this card before 100 times. It's, like... This seems like a good version of plus draw card.
Yeah. Karn, Scion of Urza is next. It's 4 mana for a Planeswalker that comes into 5. It has a +1. You reveal 2 cards from your library. An opponent chooses one of them, puts the card into your hand, then exile the other with a silver counter. You go -1 to put a card with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. So both of its abilities draw you a card, but you have to plus it first. And then has a -2 of crit is 0/0 colorless construct where it gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. I actually thought this card was fake when it was spoiled. And it's not because I think this card is broken. It's because I think this card is too... It does one thing too well. So, I know that a lot of people are like, well, they get a pick on the plus. But the fact that it doesn't matter with the minus, and in the matchups where you want to be plusing and minusing constantly, I think this card is too good in those matchups.
It's just going to change the kind of removal spells you're just going to have to play answers to it. What I would say is that compared to plus draw a card with some bonus, if you can answer this quickly, it's much worse.
Yeah, if you can kill it before... But the thing is it kind of, like, it immediately has 6, right? Because it pluses to 6.
Sure, so...
Which is why I thought it was fake.
You probably can't burn it out, right? Like, this isn't the kind of card that...
Right, but you also wouldn't board this in that matchup.
Right. No, I mean, what it means is you probably have to play more Planeswalker-specific answers in your control decks in, like, mirrors and against, like, out of... both mid-range decks against control and control decks against mid-range.
I think this guy's
really good, but I think that the minus one is rarely going to be good immediately. Like,
well, yeah, because you have to plus it first.
No, but I mean, like, the second turn. Still a lot of the time,
sure.
The minus one is going to be...
Because it's probably worse. It's probably better to plus it again than to minus the first time.
It depends on the two you hit, but like you have to hit exactly what you're looking for it to really have that kind of play pattern.
Yeah, I do want to say this. I've never seen a card both be the most underrated and overrated card in a set, but I think this card did it. Like, there are people that think this card is broken. And then there are people that think this card is unplayable in every format. Which, it's probably a good place for a Magic card to be when spoiler season happens.
Yeah, it's interesting, at least. Obviously, I think this card is good. I just think that, specifically, you're going to play a lot of games where it draws a card, but not the card. And unless the game is going on really long, like, really long, and your opponent has nothing...
Yeah. Here's my problem, Michael.
It doesn't run away with it.
Maybe you can answer this. Does this give too many decks a sideboard option for very true control decks?
Maybe, but it's also not especially easy to resolve a 4-mana sorcery consistently in those matchups. And it's a 4-mana sorcery that dies to Vraska's Contempt and Cast Out at pretty much any point in the next few turns.
Sure.
So, I think it's weird to make a colorless Planeswalker that's so cheap, just because one of the ways they had sort of made colorless Planeswalkers, like, have a sort of color identity in the past was to make them mostly really expensive.
Yeah.
So this card is a little bit unusual in that sense, but I think that anyone who's, like, panicking about this card should probably think about how the play patterns actually work a little bit more, because it's pretty bad against aggressive decks, I think.
Yes.
And I'm not convinced that it just, like... I think there are going to be a lot of games where it's providing you, like, what is technically card advantage, but is, like, kind of bad card advantage. Like, not all card advantage is created equal, right?
Yeah. My worry is that... this card's best case scenario is being a colorless Jace Memory, or Jace Architect of Thought, is the best that it can be. And that's too good. But I think it's not going to be close to being that good.
Not usually.
And I think that its worst case scenario is you literally can't play this card in the matchup. And I think that's okay. You want cards to exist that way.
This card seems a little bit hard to main deck to me.
Yeah,
in most decks, like, unless we're playing like an artifact theme deck where the second minus is a real ability,
the Grixis Thopter deck, right,
or something like that, right? Like, you have to be playing some artifacts, I think, for this to be a main deck card that you're like thrilled with. I could be wrong, obviously, but
I think we both could, right? Like, I'm pretty in the middle. You actually seem a little bit lower than me, so.
But, I mean, it's still a card I think is, like, very powerful and will situationally seem great. I just think that people, like, get really excited about plus draw a card on a 4-mana card, but plus draw the worst of the top two is not plus draw a card.
Yeah. Dampening Sphere and Gilded Lotus are being skipped on this podcast. I think that they're both playable in certain situations. Once a Braid is gone, Gilded Lotus gets better. But the card that I want to talk about next is Mox Amber. I actually don't even care about the card. You do, though. So why don't you read it and talk about it?
So Mox Amber is a legendary artifact that taps to add one mana of any color among legendary creatures and planeswalkers you control. And I'm not really interested in this card for Standard.
Oh, are you thinking of the modern legendary deck? Like the Bant deck from back in the day?
I just think there are, like, interesting implications with, Isamaru. There are enough one-mana legends. I know Frank Karsten posted some shells where he was trying to use it, and it just seemed interesting. I think it's just a card to keep an eye on. Kind of a cool one. Pretty powerful with Thalia in particular.
Yeah. I want to be clear about this card on something, because I know that one of our favorite podcasts, Spike Feed, shout out to Curtis and his co-host. They misread this card on their podcast. They said that you actually tapped it to cast a creature or planeswalker that was legendary. It does not do that, because if it did, it would break Modern wide open.
Right. It would restrict your deck building in a different way, but it would probably be too good.
Yeah. On the way that it is worded, however, has me a lot less excited. And the reason for that is, one, I actually agree with Mike. I actually don't think this card has very real Standard implications. Only because you actually can't get the necessary cheap cards to make the ramp matter in Standard.
You would need a really high density, and it would be density where you would be playing cards you don't want to play.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that when you think about cards like Legacy and formats like Legacy and Modern, it depends. You have to specifically want 1-2 cost cards and have a lot of 1-2 cost cards before this deck card gets good. It's funny, because when I thought about this card, I was like, well, it's just like Mox Opal is so good because of X, Y, and Z. But it actually has similar play patterns to Mox Opal when you really think about it. Mox Opal needs X to be in play before it's activated. Now, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you think about Mox Opal, the lands get to count for that. And unfortunately for this card, I actually don't believe that the Oracle on this would produce colorless mana. So if you played a legendary land, it wouldn't even matter, because it's legendary creatures.
Planeswalkers, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it actually doesn't have that same play pattern as Mox Opal, where, like, the land's going to count you towards that. It's tough. And I think that we have to both deck build and play before we'll know.
Yeah, I think this card is specifically interesting with Thalia. And I love Thalia, so...
Well, doesn't Thalia Namba with it?
No, you cast it before you cast Thalia.
Oh, I'm the dumbest human on
I mean,
the planet, right?
You could cast it after, but then it...
But it seems way worse, yeah.
Less good.
Fun fact, this card costs 0, and making it cost 1 makes it worse. So we all learned something just now, and let's move on to Power Stone Shard, which is a card that I think people are unreasonably excited about. So this card is 3 mana. You can tap it to add colors for each artifact you own named Power Stone Shard. And people are raving about this card. And, oh, this hurts my head. Michael, you hate ramp spells. You go first.
I don't know. This card makes you want to play it with Paradox Engine, and that's generally a sign that it's not good.
Here's the thing. Would you... I shouldn't ask some listeners, because I watched some listeners play with 3-mana ramp 1 spells in colorless earlier this week. But I'm typically not happy playing that card. And the fact that I need a second one of these to make them both good, which means that I'm at like 9... What is that? 6? I guess it's not that, right? Like, I could be on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... So I'm on 8 mana, 4 of it's colorless. It's like, it's very specific things. I don't think that they would print this card in a world where this card is insane.
So,
like,
just because
it would
this
be
way, right?
broken.
You have to draw, so you're like 40% to draw one. I mean, probably, so you're 40% to have one in the opener. By like turn three or four, you're probably like 50% roughly to have one. You're, you know, probably half that to have two. And way, way less than that. So if in a quarter of your games, roughly, you have two copies, and that's like the point where it starts being
a real card.
Good effect.
Yeah, I'm just not
that's
there.
That's just bad.
Traxos, Scourge of Krug, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong at least three ways, is a 4-mana 7/7 trample legendary artifact creature construct. It enters the battlefield tapped, and it doesn't untap during your untap step. Whenever you cast a historic spell, you can untap it. Artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic. I feel like this card's not getting enough hype because I actually feel like that downside's not big enough.
I don't think that downside's very big at all.
Does this worry you?
No, only because I thought Looping Prototype might be like a card, and it was most definitely not a card. So I think I'm off of artifact creatures with restrictions. Like, I need to be saved from myself. I liked Metalwork Colossus and Looping Prototype, so I'm just going to bow out on this one.
The downside doesn't seem big enough to me. But what do we know? We know nothing.
It's sort of like, it's kind of like the vanilla test, though, right? Like, if it's just a guy, I mean, trample is not nothing, but it's like, it doesn't protect itself, and it's legendary.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't draw, like, multiples and have them, like, untap each other, or, like...
Right.
It's maybe okay, but this isn't a card I look at and think, oh, man, I'm going to die to this a lot.
But that being said, I do look at it and think, if I die to it, I'm probably going to die to it a lot. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, sure. It's either nothing or something.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on to the lands. I want to skip the Cabal Stronghold. Shout out to that. I don't know. If you can play
Mono Black, it's good. If you can't, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and not only that, but like it doesn't work with Urborg. Fun fact. That doesn't work. So don't try that. Let's talk about that really quick. So the check lands we already talked about with Jadeen, but
they're good, right? They give every mana more, every three color combination more options, especially if you're willing to play cycling lands.
Yep, I think that they are inherently good. I do think that check lands are better in mid range decks and control decks than aggro decks. But I don't think that there's a way to fix the way that dual lands work to make that not true one direction or the other. They're either going to favor control or they're going to favor aggro, and mid-range will always benefit from all of them. And there's not a way around that unless you literally just print straight-up dual lands.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on...
No, I don't know. I like the art on these ones. They look nice.
Yeah.
I like checklands. They're like reasonable dual lands. I like checklands in a format with cycle lands. I think that's a nice little innovation that they've given us.
So to be fair, checklands are my favorite duels they've ever printed in my time. Like, I like them better than shocklands. I like them better than cycling lands. I like them better than scrylands. I just think that they're the perfect balance of like what you need. Because, like, what's the worst thing? Like, you play them on turn two in your aggro deck? Like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't facilitate splashing really well. They more facilitate true two-color decks or three-color decks.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all have played a bunch of games with checklands at this point. Like, I don't think there's a whole lot of point in harping on it too much.
So, we have the Memorials. And I'm really sad that these weren't created equally. And I'll say my opinion, and you can say yours, Michael.
Okay.
I feel like the red one and the green one are significantly worse than the rest.
So, I like the blue one and the white one.
Okay.
I kind of like the green one. I don't like the black one. And the red one obviously sucks.
The red one's terrible.
The red one felt like something that, you know, used to be kind of Ramnap ruinsy, and then they just like were like, eh, probably not.
They were like, this did something else, but we realized that was broken.
Well,
like,
we've been there, done that, wasn't fun last time, not fun this time. Off it.
Yeah, the black one for me seems better than the green one. I think that they do like super similar things, so maybe I'm off on this.
So I kind of agree with that. I just think that the top five cards of your library are
usually better than the cards in your graveyard.
So it's not necessarily that they're better, but it's like, I think they're often better, and we're kind of back to like the, if we clear things that weren't going to win us the game off the top of our deck,
sure,
like how
sure.
much value does that have? And if we're at a spot in the game where we're kind of looking for big things to cast, and we're clearing things that aren't big things, if we hit a big thing, cool. If we don't hit a big thing,
we didn't draw the not big things.
Right.
That's fair.
I think the blue one seems great.
Yeah, we've seen the blue one before in different versions. It's been good in the past. I think it'll be good again.
This one making blue specifically seems good because control decks are pretty happy to play tap lands. The white one I'm a little less sure about, but like,
it's tough because it enters the battlefield tapped, but its effect is really good. So it's like, is its late game effect worth the fact that like you're taking a mana hit?
So you probably can't play a ton of them, but like I could even see that card being, I could see the green, white, or black one seeing some kind of limited play in mid-range decks.
Yeah. So that's it from us for the set review. Let us know what you thought. Let us know if this is better for you. We talked about the cards we wanted to talk about rather than, you know, whatever. It's still a longer episode. Like, you got a lot more content out of us than you usually would. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/ccmdg. If you become a patron of $3 or more per month, you're eligible for these tokens I'm going to send out at the end of this week. I really appreciate it. I got messages during this show from multiple people telling me not to worry about it, but I'm still worried about it. Like, the point of this podcast is like to be improving, right? And I've done a poor job at managing Patreon in 2018. Like, there's no denying that, and I'm not going to sit there and pretend like I've done a good job. I want to thank you for your patience with me, but I still could do better, so I'm going to do better. You can find me at Sensor13H. You can find Michael at MagicMikeNTG. You can find Mason at Mason E. Clark. You can join the conversation by going to constructivecriticism.com. You know, click on the bios page to find everything. But if you don't want to do that, you can just join the Constructed Criticism family on Facebook. You can join the Discord. That's on that page. I'm not reading that out loud. You can, if you're a patron of $5 or more, you can join the Constructed Critics group. You can join the clan by messaging me at Smith13Dev or Quinn at Earthstrep. It's URTHSTYRPE. You can tweet at us with hashtag Would That Be Good. If you read it, or if you tweet it, Mason will read it. Mason, what is our first tweet?
It's Ben tweets,
"Oh,
while my tweet about Sultai Snake may not age like fine wine, I'm certain my body will."
Yeah,
hashtag
Mason's
Would That Be Good.
Mason actually doesn't get to read these anymore. I just realized that we're changing the format. So Mason, you might hear him live, but you're not. I'm not editing Mason into the show, in our new, in our new format. What was the first tweet, Michael?
It's Ben Vasco tweeting at me and Mason. While my tweet about Sultai Snake may not age like fine wine, I'm certain my body will. Hashtag, Would That Be Good. There are
what
also a lot
mean?
Of sunglasses in this tweet. It was because we were giving him a hard time for tweeting about Sultai Snake being the best deck and then having, you know, one copy in the top eight.
I think that the Moto results say that it was the best deck last week.
I mean, it wasn't the best deck for that event.
It was the best deck on Moto last week. That's just factually true. It literally had the most 5-0s.
No. So. He was talking about the GP specifically. It was.
I wasn't on that podcast. I'm defending him unbiasedly and unapologetically.
You can say unapologetically. I don't think you can say. First of all, I don't think unbiasedly is a word. But I don't think you can legitimately say that either. Whether it's a word or not.
Have I ever played a snake deck in my life, Michael?
I mean, I have, and I don't like that card, so probably.
Patrick says, lost in the semis today to Adonis Climb Constrictor. Hashtag relevant. However, I'm happy to announce that I am an official member of Team CCMDG. Thank you, at Spencer13H. Hashtag always improving. Fun fact, there is no longer Team CCMDG, and he's not a member of that. However, Patrick sent me a really heartfelt and good message about hashtag always improving and his goals in Magic. And people often ask me, like, Spencer, how do I test with you? Like, how do I test with your group? You know, I don't have the results. I don't have this thing. And the mindset that Patrick gave and the reasons that he gave it was enough for me. Like, the guy's got zero pro points, but what he does have and what he very much expressed to me was a willingness to be a part of the group. One of the reasons that Team CCMTAG ended was the separation of Danny and Michael, me and Matt, and honestly the rest of the people. Maybe Chris is an exception here, but like, there was a real separation of like goals and like what we wanted to achieve and how we wanted to achieve it. And one of the things that Patrick expressed to me was like a willingness to adapt, a willingness to just do, just you know, in the software business we call it GSD. It's get stuff done. And Patrick adopted a very get stuff done mentality where it's like, I don't care what I'm doing. Plug me in somewhere, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to get better at it as I do it. And that was important to me. So I just want to shout out Patrick on that. And I shout out Michael and Danny for not loving me. And
oh, it sounds so harsh when you say it like that.
To be fair, this literally on Tuesday, I was like, Lassen was like, hey, Spencer, do you have a team for the RPDQ? I was like, yeah, I do. I'm sorry, man. And I was like, I thought you were playing with Alex. And Alex was like, no, I'm playing with Matt and Michael. And I'm like, all right, I'm over this. You play with them. I'm done. I'm not dealing with this.
I don't know what anyone's... I thought you were playing with Chris and Quentin. But Quentin won one, so I don't know what Quentin's doing.
I am playing with Chris and Quentin. That's factually correct. But that is because I'm done dealing with the... with the Michael Matt team drama.
Yep. You know me and Matt. We're very dramatic people.
I wasn't dealing with it. You guys can go play with Alex and you know, my feelings will be hurt. And, I will. Literally, I text you and Chris asked me and I said, Michael, Chris wants me to play with him. If you get silver, I am going to play with him. But if not, I'm still with you. And you were like, okay. But nothing that I say matters, apparently.
Well, I do have silver.
No. That's, you know what I mean. You shut up. I love you. I love you, and I love Matt, and I love Alex. So, all right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
See ya. Sorry, am I supposed to press stop?